just not working anymore. Well, I had me a wife, two car and a boat. Things got bad, now the boat won't float. I don't like it. I'm too proud to be poor. They used to call us working class, but we're just not working anymore.
Hello, folks. Welcome to another edition of the World Labor Hour, brought to you on the air, WEFT, listener-supported community radio station in Champaign, Illinois, broadcasting at 90.1 FM and webcasting live worldwide at weft.org. Views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of the station manager, board of directors, or of Prairie Air Incorporated. Now, here's just a few underwriting announcements. This hour program is brought to you in part by Central Illinois Jobs for Justice, a coalition of union and community groups working for economic justice and workers' rights. Central Illinois Jobs for Justice holds regular meetings on the third Saturday of every month. For more information or for the unemployed, underemployed helpline, you can call 217-328-2295. World Labor Hour is also supported in part by the listeners of WFT and the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois. And Program and Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WFT and the Illinois Education Association Teachers Union. The Illinois Education Association's mission is to affect excellence and equity in public education and to be the advocacy organization for all public education employees. And Program on the World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WFT and Decatur attorney Bill Favor, who believes that the mission of the law is the safety of the people. Bill Faber proudly supports the World Labor Hour. And last but not least, the Graduate Employees Organization Union, the GEO at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign, strives to not only democratically represent graduate employees, but also to give solidarity and support to other unions, organizations, and workers engaged in the struggle for social justice both on and off campus. The GEO is proud to support the World Labor Hour on WFT Community Radio. Okay, we're going to be having an interesting show today. I'm here solo today, and later in about half past the hour or so, we're going to be having a couple special guests from Northern Illinois, Elgin, Illinois, Northern Illinois Jobs with Justice, who are down here for the Central Illinois Jobs with Justice meeting today, which I was just at a few minutes ago. So they're going to be coming into the studio here at about half past the hour, and they're going to be talking about charter schools. For any listeners out there who are unfamiliar with charter schools basically are privatized corporate schools that run basically get most of their funding from public tax dollars. They're really horrible institutions in the sense that they basically rob the public funds to make private profits for corporations. There's a lot of big corporate money behind this being pushed. These schools are being pushed nationwide. The Gates Foundation, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, is one of the big backers. The Walton Family Foundation, which are the owners of Walmart, are another big corporate backer of this. There's been a couple of Hollywood-produced propaganda films, basically, supporting charter schools that have come out the last few years. One of them is Waiting for Superman, and the other one's called Won't Back Down, which I just saw recently, about a year ago. It's a ridiculous plot about some parent who's fighting the evil teachers union, supposedly, in order to get a decent education for her children and the other children. I mean, it's just absolutely horrible. But the reason behind all this is that, like a lot of other things going on right now in American society and around the world, is that private corporations are trying to rob and plunder public monies and destroy the public sector in the meantime. I mean, their goal is to basically try to destroy public education in this country and get back to a place to where used to be in this country, to where it was only private institutions that had education available, and you had to pay money to go there. So what ultimately happened was children from working class and poor families weren't able to afford to go to school much beyond the third, fifth, or eighth grade. This is what they want to return to. But this is the public sector, basically public schools in this country, is a potential gold mine for these corporate interests. I mean, in the tens, if not hundreds of billions of dollars of potential profits if they are successful in their agenda. So anyway, yes, a woman named Mary Sheskreen and a friend of hers are going to be in here talking about some very successful things they've been able to do to fight back against charter schools.
Hey, I wanted you to ask them about the Noble Charter Schools. It's Rahm Emanuel's favorite. And they just recently had a scandal because their policy was to fine children for their infractions and then to charge them money to pay for their rehabilitation if they were to be suspended or something.
Wow.
Absolutely crazy.
Yes.
There actually is an allegation that I saw that a couple of students actually committed suicide.
Oh, wow.
Because of the pressure of this Noble charter school. So they may know about it because it was written up in the Trib.
Okay.
Which is no critic of charter schools, that's for sure. They're
yes.
They're a big booster.
Yes, but there has been a couple critical articles in the Tribune lately, uh-huh. And then a couple in the Sun-Times, too. So it's interesting. But, yes, Chicago has been hit really hard, really devastated by the charter school agenda. So has Philadelphia, Washington, D.C., and, of course, New Orleans, right after Hurricane Katrina. What happened? They used the disaster of the hurricane to basically, with a stroke of a pen, wipe out all public schools in the city of New Orleans and institute all private charter schools there. Right now, New Orleans is there's virtually no public schools left. And this is the thing. See, they try to claim that charter schools is the solution to bad public education. Of course, studies have shown that charters do not outperform public schools at all. Some do, but most don't. And the fact is that they're all very expensive.
And they get to discard the students that they don't want.
Exactly. The ones that have some success rate, what they do is, like you said, Paul, they do a combination of cherry picking and lemon dropping. Basically, cherry pick the best students and lemon drop the special ed kids, the kids that need English as a second language, or even just kids that are sort of average or below average in academic performance.
Right. And then they go to the public school and bring the ratio down there, or bring down the results there. So it's a real scam. And Arne Duncan, who had his own clout list, he in fact do you know the story about Bruce Rauner getting his daughter in the Walter Payton magnet school?
No.
Oh, this wasn't a charter school, but it was a public magnet school that was very hard to get in.
Mm-hmm.
And Bruce Rauner, the Republican who's apparently going to run against Quinn, was actually a friend of Arne,
uh-huh,
an FOA. And he actually went out of his way. The rich don't care about party labels. They just know what their class is.
Right? That's right.
And I'm sure, I don't understand why Moore isn't made of it. I mean, he's our Secretary of Education, and he got caught in a scandal helping getting his friends and people he thought it would be helpful to help into get their kids into schools that they wanted to get into.
Now, but when you got the President of the United States behind you and all sorts of corporate money, that you know, that says a lot and accomplishes a lot. Just for the listeners who aren't familiar, Arne Duncan was the the Chicago school systems do not have an elected school board.
Right.
It's appointed by the mayor. And Arne Duncan was a mayoral appointee, first under Daley and then continued under Rahm Emanuel. And he was the head of the Chicago school board, the appointed school board. And then when Barack Obama got elected president in 2008, shortly thereafter, Arne Duncan was appointed as head of the U.S. Department of Education. And both Arne Duncan, of course, Arne Duncan's a big backer of charter schools, just like Rahm Emanuel. And so is Barack Obama. I mean, he's come out publicly and stated that he's all behind the whole charter school agenda.
Arne Duncan has absolutely no credentials to be in charge of a school system. His mother was a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yes.
He has no other credential. And he has this turnaround corporate language that they then apply to schools. The turnaround mm-hmm. school phenomenon mm-hmm. is just right out of the corporate ideology and discourse. It's absolutely astonishing.
Yes, and what happens is these charter schools, not only do they drain money from public schools, but also the other public schools up there, especially in larger cities like Chicago, and other places in Illinois outside Chicago, they're starved of funding. And of course, you know, when your schools are starved for funding, they have to have larger classes and all sorts of other things that inhibit education. Where the charters, they can limit their class size to a small number, and you kind of get the picture here. Basically, yeah, it's a big scam to rob the taxpayers.
And it's particularly bad in Chicago because Chicago had the small schools movement, which wasn't a charter school movement.
Mm-hmm.
It was inside of the public school system where they were trying to do innovative forms and changing all the stuff that we're supposed to be getting from charter schools. Chicago school system was already trying to do this.
Mm-hmm.
I recommend a Pauline Lipman, LIPP, I believe it's two P's, at the University of Illinois Chicago. She's got some great books out about the city and about education. And she's the person that I learned this clout list scandal about Arne Duncan. She had a particular animus for... she hated Arne Duncan, and well, she should have, and I think you should too, personally. And I think it's really a scandal. Like I said, the small school movement was really promising, and it pretty much got subsumed by all this. They cut back 50 schools, and then they open a charter school in the same building. It's ridiculous.
Yes, and also another thing in this charter school movement is military academies. You know, it's just...
it's about 10 or 11 in Chicago.
Yes.
And they're all in the poorer districts.
Yes. And this is the thing, is that this charter school movement is actually starting resegregation. Basically resegregation along racial lines as well as along class lines, because it's the working class and poor students that are getting you know, the raw deal on this. So anyway, we're going to take a quick music break, and then I'm going to be right back with some news headlines. So stay tuned. You're listening to WEFT, the World Labor Hour, and we're still in pledge drive. So listeners, anything you can do to if you've already contributed, thank you very much. If you haven't, please call in at 359-9338 and donate whatever you can to help keep us on the air. So here's a little Tom Morell. We'll be right back.
Come all you good workers, good news to you I'll tell, of how the good old Union has come in here to dwell. Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on?
Okay, you heard Tom Morello doing the Labor classic, Which Side Are You On? You're listening to the World Labor Hour on WFT Radio, broadcasting from Champaign, Illinois, 90.1 FM, and webcasting live worldwide at WFT.org. Just to let all you listeners know that we are still here on Pledge Drive, and anything you could contribute to help keep us on the air would be appreciated. You're not going to hear any kind of programming like we have here at WFT on corporate radio. You'll not hear any of the type of public affairs programs that we have here, like the Little Labor Hour, like Higher Ground, News from Neptune, or any of those. And you're not going to hear a lot of the musical genres that we play here. It's very unique, and we really need your help to help keep us on the air. So please, any amount that you could afford, please call in and pledge at 217-359-9338. Okay, we've got some few news stories here, and start off with, on a recent Saturday morning, 500 protesters poured out of a parade of school buses, signs and megaphones in hand, and tried their best to shame a single Staples store just outside Chicago. Among them was Michael Sukumal, a 20-year veteran of the U.S. Postal Service who traveled all the way from New Jersey for a nearby labor conference. What has infuriated Sukumal is many of his fellow postal union members is a new arrangement struck between the United States Postal Service and the office supply retailer Staples. Under the premise of a pilot program, a limited number of Staples store locations are now offering most of the same services provided at the post offices to be handled by Staples employees rather than postal workers. It's just a big step towards privatization, said Sukumal, who hopped a bus to the protests from the Labor Notes Conference, a biennial gathering of labor activists held in Chicago, which I happened to attend when it was on a couple weeks ago. I think it's a terrible thing that the Postmaster General would even think about this. Okay, and then when Barack Obama was running for president in 2008, he told the AFL-CIO convention that he would oppose the U.S.-Colombia Free Trade Agreement promoted by then-President George Bush, as he said, because the violence against unions in Colombia would make a mockery of the very labor protections that we have insisted be included in these kind of trade agreements. Labor advocates cheered. Once in office, though, Barack Obama advocated for a labor action plan to overcome what he saw as the obstacles to congressional ratification of the agreement. He and Colombian President Juan Manuel Santos signed the agreement on April 7, 2011, and Congress ratified the free trade agreement a year later. Colombian opposition to the agreement was always deeper and broader than the United States. Violence against unionists became the main opposition slogan in the U.S., but it was always a slender issue to base a campaign on. The argument implied that the free trade agreement was overall a good idea that would benefit Colombians and was used to pressure the government to improve its labor policy so it could get the free trade agreement as a reward. However, to date, no such improvements have happened. Colombia still has the highest murder rate of trade unionists and social activists in the world, and the economic benefits that have resulted from this free trade agreement have gone almost entirely to the wealthy. Okay, and we also have a story here about offshore tax havens. As hardworking Americans file their taxes today, it's a good time to be reminded that ordinary taxpayers pick up the tab for special interest loopholes in our tax laws. A new U.S. report released today revealed that the average American taxpayer in 2013 would have to shoulder an extra $1,259 in state and federal taxes to make up for the revenue lost due to the use of offshore tax havens by corporations and wealthy individuals. Average taxpayers and small business owners foot the bill for offshore tax dodging. Every dollar, it seems, in taxes that companies avoid by booking profits to shell companies and tax havens must be balanced by cuts to public programs, higher taxes for the rest of us, or more debt, said Dan Smith, tax and budget advocate. Every year, corporations and wealthy individuals avoid paying an estimated $184 billion in state and federal income tax by using complicated accounting tricks to shift their profits to offshore tax havens. Of that $184 billion, $110 billion is avoided specifically by corporations. Okay, we also would like to inform you of some public service announcements here. Tune in today at from 2 to 3 p.m. This Saturday and every Saturday for another sports show hosted by fellow worker Neil Parthen, which is on WRFU 104.5 FM, and is also broadcast on Urbana Public Television, Comcast Channel 6 on Wednesdays from 6 to 7. And also on Sunday, this Sunday and every Sunday, check out Labor's Worldview, which is also on Comcast Channel 6 from 4 to 5 p.m. And this week's programs is about charter schools. So tune in for that. In that charter school episode, our special guest in that is also, again, Neil Parthen, who's a public school teacher here in the community. Also, the Independent Media Center presents Dr. Robert McChesney on his new book, The Digital Disconnect, How Capitalism is Turning the Internet Against Democracy. And this will be at the Independent Media Center Tuesday, April 22nd from 7 to 9 p.m. The event is free and open to the public. One of the foremost experts in this field, Dr. McChesney, offers a startling analysis of how commerce has corrupted the internet, collapsing credible journalism and freedom of access to information in favor of unchecked consumerism. He proposes that we cannot examine the growth of the internet without considering capitalism as a key component. The internet has allowed news to travel to millions in seconds, but McChesney states not without the serious limits that commerce has placed on democratic free speech on the web. So come here, Dr. McChesney, speak and engage the public in discussion about this important issue. And this is, again, at the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center, which is located at 202 South Broadway Avenue in Urbana. And for more information, you can contact Danielle Chenoweth at chyn at ucimc.org. That's C-H-Y-N at ucimc.org. Okay, we're waiting on our guests here to show up to the station, so we're going to go back to a little more music here, and we're going to maybe continue with a little Tom Morello. So you're listening to the World Labor Hour on WFT, listener-supported community radio station in Champaign, Illinois. I'll be right back.
Flag unfurled in city streets across the world, and every bell in the city's rung, every freedom song that's yet unsung. We'll find a voice, we'll find a way to fill the air on the 1st of May. And in the storm we'll bend like the willow gill, but together we will stand the wall against the wind. Soul who's perished along freedom's road, at the barricade or in the jail cell. To struggle hard is to struggle well. Your struggle is alive today. We're marching out on the 1st of May. And in the storm we'll bend like the willow gill, but together we will stand a wall against the wind. Migrant feel clenched fists, and in the prison yard there's a rumor that there's something they might have missed. In every mill and mine and shop, every baton swing of every crooked cop, every dirty threat, every boss's curse, keep your mouth shut, keep your eyes on your work. I'll take my chances, today's the day. The clock ticks down till the 1st of May. And in the storm we'll bend like the willow gill, but together we will stand a wall against the wind. And in the storm we'll bend like the willow gill, but together we will stand, my friend, a wall against the wind, 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 a wall against the wind. Some people say a man is made out of mud. Poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bone. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older, deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store. Sun didn't shine. I picked up my shovel and I walked to the mine. Loaded 16 tons, a number 9 coal. And the straw boss said, well, bless my soul. 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store. Was drizzling. sizzling rain. A fighting and trouble are my middle name. I was raised in the canebrake pine. Old mama lion, ain't no boss man alive make me walk the line. I load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store. So if you see me coming, better step aside. A lot of men didn't, a lot of men died. One fist of iron and the other steel. If the right one don't catch it, then the left one will. You load 16 tons, and what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store. To the company store. To the company store.
Okay, that was Tom Morello, and we are back here. You're listening to the World Labor Hour on WFT, Listener Support Community Radio Station in Champaign, Illinois. And our two guests have joined us, Mary Shesgreen and Daniel Corral. Welcome to the World Labor Hour, both of you.
I'm delighted to be here.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yes. And Mary, so we just came from a Jobs with Justice meeting, and at which you were talking a little bit about what Northern Illinois Jobs with Justice in Elgin has actually done to kind of push back this whole corporate agenda of charter schools. And I think maybe, you know, at that meeting, most of the people there were familiar with what charter schools, and early in the program, I kind of gave a little background on what charter schools are. Maybe you could start out by just explaining why it is you think it's important that, you know, Jobs with Justice and other citizens, especially public sector employees, should be concerned about this.
Well, a charter school is a public school that has a charter to operate separately from a regular school district. So it has public funding, but it's privately run and it's independent, and they are free from the usual rules. They're also free from any union contract.
Mm-hmm.
An individual charter school could be a great school. It could be a great learning environment. In fact, initially, it was creative teachers who came up with the idea. But charter schools are different from the charter school movement. The charter school movement is what is alarming and disturbing to me as a citizen and an activist. This whole concept, which initially was about creativity in teaching, has been hijacked by the wealthy in this country, the billionaires, the 1%, and it's part of this whole education reform agenda.
So-called reform.
So-called reform. The education reform movement started in the 80s. One of the ideas comes from Milton Friedman, who initially, way back in 1980, said we shouldn't have public schools. They should all be private schools. We should not have compulsory education. It should all be voluntary. a libertarian idea, which at that time was kind of a fringy idea.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are now, all these years later, where these ideas have entered into the mainstream in a very big way.
So basically, the people like Milton Friedman want to take us back to an era back prior to the early 1900s when most working class and poor people didn't go to school beyond the third grade and unless they could afford to pay for it, and usually hence they weren't able to get much education at all.
Yes, that's certainly not what anybody would say
mm-hmm.
out loud right now, but the there is this pressure now to move toward privatization,
mm-hmm.
and it's the education reform agenda has several main ideas. One of them is that if public schools aren't doing all that well, then the private sector should come in and take them over because the private sector is inherently superior to the public sector.
We've heard this song and dance before, I believe,
right.
with other...
very familiar.
Yes, yes.
The post office, whatever else,
yes.
they'll take it over and they'll do a better job.
Mm-hmm.
And No Child Left Behind came out of that, and No Child Left Behind really introduced this way of looking at our American school public school system as if it was full of failure. And they love to talk about failing schools, and they've set up an agenda whereby almost every public school sooner or later is going to get branded as a failing school.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really nasty way to humiliate and punish teachers and administrators and communities. It's a way of ignoring the fact that the real problem is poverty.
Mm-hmm.
It's a way to distract us from ever addressing poverty and solving poverty by instead stigmatizing and blaming teachers and trying to break teachers' unions
mm-hmm.
and replace neighborhood public schools with charter schools, many of which are not-for-profit, some of which are for-profit.
Mm-hmm.
And even the not-for-profit ones are a step in the direction of privatization. So it's I got into it first because I do care about the rights of teachers as union members, and I think collective bargaining is essential. But the more I dug into it, the more I realized that there are other things at stake, like democracy. A good public school system is the backbone of our democracy.
Mm-hmm.
And because it attempts to teach everybody. When these folks talk about the failing American schools, they compare us with a place like Finland, which has a very homogeneous population and which has very little poverty.
Mm-hmm. They also have every teacher's unionized, get paid well, and
all of that.
I mean, they better be careful if they start comparing us to Finland because they're
doing
a lot of things right.
They compare us to Finland,
mm-hmm.
and then they go on to prescribe ideas that are the opposite
yes.
of how Finland got to its wonderful success.
Mm-hmm.
They propose high-stakes testing, they propose merit pay for teachers, and they propose charter schools.
Mm-hmm.
High-stakes testing has turned out to cause a lot of cheating.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you tell a whole school system that their jobs depend on the scores they get, and that if they have bad scores, they're going to be fired and humiliated, you're going to have some cheating.
Indeed. I mean, that would just be incredible pressure.
It's terrible pressure. And we are also learning that the tests don't teach what... the tests are not good teaching tools. And that when schools are arranged in such a way that there's a whole lot of testing, teachers teach to the test. They don't teach creatively. They don't teach with context. They take facts out of context. They have kids doing rote memorization. It's a very unhealthy.
So the focus goes from learning and creativity and critical thinking to merely being able to, it goes all, the focus goes entirely on these tests.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Merit pay doesn't work out very well because in genuinely great teachers collaborate with each other. Merit pay encourages them to compete with each other, to outscore each other. It also makes them not want to take the children who are more difficult to teach,
mm-hmm.
the children who are not going to score well on tests, like children with special needs,
mm-hmm.
Children who have special diagnoses, the English language learners.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very unhealthy thing.
And even just slightly below average students, I could see, would be shunned. You know, a teacher wouldn't want to have them. They'd want to have the average and above. So,
yes.
So Daniel, tell me, what interests you about this? How did you get involved with Northern Illinois Jobs with Justice and this whole charter school issue?
Well, you know, Mary and I met while I was working at Trader Joe's, and you know, I was finishing my graduate studies of theology in Chicago, and she would just tell me, she would show up with her buttons, you know, peace buttons, and very interesting buttons, and I would ask her about peace and justice, and mm-hmm. we would discuss peace and justice. So over the years of getting to know each other and talking about these issues, she would introduce me to some of the organizations she was with and affiliated with, and later on, I came to know more about Northern Illinois Jobs with Justice and some of the issues that they are working towards, and also a different organization called Fox Valley Citizens for Peace and Justice. So that's how I became involved, and then later on, also became employed with one of the organizational members on the steering committee of Northern Illinois Jobs with Justice, which
mm-hmm.
is a Chicago Workers Collaborative.
Okay.
So this is all due to a conversation at a store.
Wow, that's great.
7 years ago. So.
That's great. That's
he
great.
Was the clerk, I was the shopper.
Okay. Yes. Could you talk a little bit about the Chicago Workers Collaborative real briefly? Because I've heard of it, but I'm not real familiar with what it does.
Oh, sure. Thank you. So the Chicago Workers Collaborative started in Chicago around, I would say, 2003, 2004.
Mm-hmm.
And they started as a worker organization where the workers all came together and were seeking to improve conditions in their various factories and to promote unions or, you know, coalitions. And so from there, they began to form the Chicago Workers Collaborative. And over the years of doing their work, of becoming basically forming worker centers in Chicago and other places like Rolling Meadows and Waukegan, that helped to educate workers and also support any efforts of those workers to organize in different capacities. They realized that a lot of their efforts were being undermined by a lot of unionizing or even organizing efforts to improve any kind of conditions in their factories and companies were being undermined by the company's use of temporary workers.
Okay.
So, you know, and they realized that a lot of the temporary workers that they met were being heavily exploited, and also that many of the conditions at their companies were becoming more and more unsafe, more and more unhealthy, so that the level of injuries, the level of wage theft, the level of conditions that you might find in many sweatshop factories around the world were prominent here in the Chicagoland area. So they said, you know, let's work to support, have our worker centers. They voted together, right? The workers said, let's vote. Let's support those workers. Let's move to have our worker centers support, educate, and be in solidarity with those workers.
Man, that sounds like a really exciting project. I mean, and much needed, because this trend is spreading the use of temporary use and exploitation of temporary workers. Right. We had an incident here in town, even a factory owned by a multi-billionaire. We actually have a one percenter that lives in this community. His name's Shahid Khan. He owns this company called Flexengate, which makes bumpers. He just bought the Florida Jaguars for $750 million, and he can't seem like he can't afford to pay his workers much above $9 an hour or provide them with adequate safety equipment. And what's interesting in that situation was that there was four groups of workers. You had Spanish-speaking Latino workers, some documented, some undocumented. You had European American workers, you had African American workers, and then you had some French speaking Congolese African workers. And they pitted all the four groups against each other. You know, they would segregate the work groups so that, you know, it was Latinos with Latinos, Africans with Africans, so to speak, and would always try to pit the other groups against each other, you know. And they were able to actually overcome a lot of these barriers, the language barrier, the cultural barrier, this whole, you know, divide and conquer attempt, and actually were able to get involved with the United Auto Workers eventually. I'm telling you this story because it's, you know, it's even spread to small communities like this, this whole basically exploitation of temporary workers. So this sounds like an exciting project. In fact, maybe I might have to have you call on the show sometime in the future. We could talk some more at length about this.
Oh, thank you. I would appreciate that. Thank you very much.
So back to charter schools. You know, it's really interesting because doing a lot of research on this, it seems like, you know, charter models, you know, at a time when the state is, you know, seriously underfunding public education, there really doesn't seem to be any convincing reason to give preferential treatment to these charters that are most, a lot of them are private corporations with CEOs. And also the charter models, they tend to be more expensive, and the results don't seem to be any better than public schools, if you look at them as a whole.
Well, hype, the advertising that supports charter schools tells parents and students that charter schools are academically superior. In fact, in study after study, it turns out that charter schools perform about the same as neighborhood public schools, sometimes worse. In a few cases, they perform better. And sometimes when we look at those few cases where the scores turn out to be better, we find out that there are reasons that are not so wholesome for why they have better scores.
Mm-hmm.
Charter schools have developed a kind of selective retention where they push out or counsel out or expel those students who are slow learners, who have special needs, English language learners. They push out the ones that are going to pull down their scores.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that those kids end up back in the regular public schools. It's a lot of disruption in the life of a child who's already vulnerable. And it makes us question again and again and again, are these schools really superior? If they're not so superior, why do we have whole institutions designed to push them on the public schools?
Yes, earlier I talked a little bit about some of the big corporate special interests behind this push nationwide, right, like the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, the Walton Family Foundation, which is the owners of the Walmart. Basically, there's been two Hollywood movies made that are,
yes,
you know, basically anti-union that and support
Waiting
charter school.
Superman.
Waiting for Superman, and a more recent one called I Won't Back Down.
Yes.
And, you know, it's amazing the amount of money behind this. And, you know, let's face it. I mean, this trend, it seems, has been happening the last 10 years of private corporations basically, I won't mince words, robbing the public funds.
Yes.
To make private profits. And it seems like they're looking at the public education sector as a potential tens, if not hundreds of billions of dollars in potential profits.
Exactly.
Now, you know, it's interesting that, what you guys, I mean, up in Elgin, and your area is kind of northern and western suburbs of Chicago, because the city of Chicago has a Jaws of Justice chapter, and then there's your chapter there. I mean, considering you guys have no paid staff, I mean, it's just amazing what you've accomplished in the last year and a half or so. Could you talk a little bit about some of the things you've done to kind of push back against these charter schools?
Well, thank you. We certainly have not done it alone, and I appreciate your kind words. In the Fox Valley of Illinois, an organization called K-12 Incorporated applied to 18 school districts all at once for a charter status. And they were offering virtual charter schools.
This is grade school, virtual charter schools.
And this was K through 12. So it's a form of school. It's like homeschooling, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. computer-assisted schooling at home, where everything is done through the computer. Once in a while, you get to meet your teacher at a local McDonald's and talk to her or him if you're having problems. So we mobilized to try to push back against K-12 Incorporated. And we had to scramble to do it because once an application is received by a school district, they have to have a public hearing within 30 to 45 days, and then they have to make a decision within another 30 to 45 days. So we had to educate ourselves, and we looked into K-12 Incorporated. We discovered that they were being sued in a couple of states for misleading their shareholders. We learned that they were a Wall Street company with a CEO who makes $5 million a year or close to it. We learned that their academic scores, the scores of their students, were abysmal, which is not surprising, because if you've any adult sits at a computer screen for 5 or 6 hours in a row, you will know how quickly you get distracted and mm-hmm. how hard it is to stay engaged with a computer screen in a focused way. Then we discovered that the state of Tennessee had a number of schools operated by K-12 Inc., and that they were very dissatisfied with K-12 Inc., and we heard about a state representative in Tennessee who was interviewed about what they had found out about K-12 Inc. An administrator in K-12 Inc. had sent an email to the teachers saying that the scores of the students didn't look high enough and that they should simply delete a number of the low scores to make the school look better.
I mean, that's fraud.
It's fraud. It's absolute fraud. And the this state representative, I think her name was Nancy Johnson. She had been a teacher. She was a feisty person. And she said, this is cheating. This mm-hmm. organization is cheating. And we got a hold of her on tape saying that. And we sent that tape out to all those 18 school districts, to the superintendents and the school boards. And then we invited that state representative, Nancy Johnson, from Tennessee. We passed the hat and collected enough money to pay for her travel. We brought her up, and we had a public meeting and had her speak about Tennessee's experience with K-12 Incorporated, which had been a negative one. Then we sent people to all those 18 school board meetings, or as many of them as we could cover, and spoke out against this charter application. And to our delight, all 18 school districts said no to K-12 Incorporated. After that, the Illinois legislature passed a one-year moratorium on virtual charters, and they have expanded it to now to a three-year moratorium on virtual charters because they need time to think about how to evaluate a charter school that has no brick-and-mortar location, which is asking for the same amount of per-pupil funding out of the school budgets as a school that has to maintain a brick-and-mortar campus and a custodian and a lunch lady and the whole, all the expenses that come with maintaining a physical school.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable. The brazenness
yes.
of this organization. The other thing to notice is that in Illinois, legally, all charter schools have to be not-for-profit. But they can have a not-for-profit organization which applies for the charter, and then they contract out with a for-profit organization which provides the actual curriculum and hires and fires the teachers and all that.
So that nonprofit who applies for the charter could be a front company for the...
It is a front company.
It always is, usually.
And during the fight over K-12 Inc. in our 18 school districts, that front group fell apart. A few of its members actually resigned from it because they looked so obviously phony.
Mm-hmm.
So K-12 Inc. is still around, and I have heard ads on the radio for K-12 Inc., so they will be back.
Okay.
We have to be prepared to fight this idea. I mean, we're certainly not opposed to using computers in the classroom, to using the wonderful resource of online education as an assist, as a supplement to the classroom. It is no replacement for the experience of being in a classroom and having a relationship with a teacher and a relationship with other kids.
Well, especially for grade school kids, mean, it's that is just inconceivable. Being a father of a daughter who went to through public school, and helping her with her homework many times. It's just wow. I mean, this is just unbelievable. The more you kind of scratch the surface on this and dig a little deeper on this whole charter school thing. Now, can you talk a little about what the charter school Illinois Charter School Commission is?
This is something really important, and again, it kind of snuck up on us. In 2011, the Illinois legislature passed, I think it was called Senate Bill 79, which established the Illinois State Charter Commission. The goal of the Charter Commission was to encourage the growth of charter schools all through the state of Illinois. And specifically, when a local school board rejected the application of a charter school, the Illinois State Charter Commission had the power to overturn the decision of the charter on appeal and to turn them down. Or to establish that charter school, even if the community, the elected school board of the community, had said no. And that's because they don't trust democracy. They don't trust the local elected school board to make a good decision.
This is very disturbing. I mean, very to think disturbing. About that, that some appointed board.
It's an appointed board that is stacked with charter school enthusiasts, some of whom had or have financial ties to charter school organizations.
You know, when I first met you, Mary, I'm at the state Jobs with Justice little